Welcome, Jack, Dr. Jim Merk.
Thank you very much, Jen. It's great to be here with you.
Now, I noted in reading your book that you have a section on the fall of the Shah of Iran, and that is really when most of this 20th and 21st century turmoil came to the surface, because that opened the door for the radical Ayatollah Khomeini to come in. And part of this was President Carter's terrible blunders, but part of it was just the Islamofascism, I believe, was due to become prominent, and that was the incident. That incident was a major player. That was 1979. Why did America let that happen? The Shah being overthrown, in other words?
Well, I think that we were concerned for the opinion of the people, because we believe in democracy.
Mm-hmm.
Democracy is the rule of the people. We faced the same thing when we had the elections in Palestine, and we got burned when Hamas took the majority of the seats in the legislature. Democracy as such, that the Shah was really trying to westernize Persian or the Iranian nation. And this is what the clerics and the Ayatollahs and the Orthodox Islamists rebelled against, because they hate democracy. They said democracy is the rule of the people and we need the rule of Allah. So-called liberty is not taught in Islam. We are diametrically opposed to each other.
We're going to get to that in just a minute here. But, all right, the Shah wanted to westernize Iran, and a greater percentage, of course, of the mullahs, they had a different opinion. However, the Iranian people back then and today, now maybe they don't want democracy because that's so foreign in these Islamic lands, but they wanted a degree of freedom.
That's true, and some have said our greatest hope would be some of the people in Iran, because many of them have been educated in this country. And the young people especially might rebel against the Ayatollahs. But this guy, Ahmadinejad, the president, is a man with great charisma. He's very much like Hitler.
Mm-hmm.
And you can see the great massive crowds that he gathers. And he's inspiring them to believe that Islam is going to rule the world. He thinks that he is the precursor of the seventh prophet, or the 12th imam, as the Shiites call him, and that he's going to be here in 3 or 4 years. And he's even built, he believes this so intensely, that he's built a highway from Tehran to one of their sacred sites to give him kind of a red carpet entrance when he comes.
Yeah, I want to build on that just a little bit. Because he believes that, he sort of believes that he's a little bit divine. I mean, Ahmadinejad, he's beyond being unstable. Most people don't grasp that he feels he's doing the will of God, the will of Allah, and that that he has some sort of divinity. The Mahdi, or Muslim Messiah, is on the horizon, and he's to help usher this Mahdi in, which is what makes him so dangerous.
He thinks he's kind of like a John the Baptist,
mm-hmm.
and he really believes this. And this is why he was bold to state that Israel should be wiped off the face of the map, because after all, Muhammad said all Jews would be killed before the day of resurrection.
Now, how do you see this Iranian scenario playing out here? Let me just say this. Very recently, actually in the last week or so, President Bush and other world leaders are once again talking about negotiating with Iran, trying to talk them out of nuclear capability. And we know that this is an exercise in futility. And it gives the Iranians more time to arm, build up their nuclear capacity.
Exactly.
Why do you think that world leaders, including President Bush, are taking this path?
Perhaps for one reason, they're blinded. The Pentagon, for example, for 4 years had no idea that Muhammad had taught these things. They had no information on him. They had no idea in the first 4 years following 9/11 that Islam was a system that wanted to take over the world. They thought these were criminals, these terrorists. They didn't realize that they were really motivated by their religious beliefs. And the Ayatollahs were some of the strongest. They believe that they are the divine ones, in a sense, This is why the Sunnis don't go for the Shiites too much, because the Ayatollahs consider themselves a shadow of Allah. But they're the ones really that started this whole thing in 1979 when Ayatollah Khomeini said that we have been given this treasure of oil, and this is Allah's treasure, and we should use it to continue the destiny that we started in the first 200 or 300 years of Islam and conquer the world.
All right. Go ahead. I didn't mean to interrupt you.
Ahmadinejad has said very boldly, it is our responsibility to conquer the world and to bring the justice of Allah to the world. And I think he's suggesting that this will happen when this seventh prophet comes.
Okay, but you really haven't answered my question, and that's probably because we don't know what's going on in the minds of world leaders, but they think they're going to negotiate themselves out of this mess.
Well, we've got a problem with Europe, because the Europeans have always been appeasers. And I think that maybe if we weren't concerned about our allies and their opinions, you see, if we went after Islam just like we went into Iraq, we'd have all kinds of opposition from these other nations. So we're trying to work within the framework of the entire diplomatic circle.
But that's an exercise in futility.
It's an exercise in futility. It's not going to work.
Yeah. So how do you see this Iran scenario playing out? Because, first of all, Israel says Iran is weeks to a few months away from being nuclear capable. Others say it's still years away. As a result, the average person on the street grows apathetic because they hear, oh, well, it's years away and something's going to take place in the meantime to settle this crisis down. And we just want to bring them to the negotiating table because there's so much time. So how do you see it? Do you think Israel's going to have to do the world's dirty work?
Well, she did in the case of Saddam when she knocked out that nuclear reactor. And she may do this again. But I think that Iran has protected herself with underground facilities, and we may not even know where all of these facilities and these centrifuges and so forth are. Now, I trust the Mossad as an intelligence force more than I do the CIA or some of the other intelligence services. That's just a gut feeling, and I think that they would be closer to maybe the truth. But Iran definitely is on a gig to get a nuclear weapon. Because they want to use it against Israel. And they would like to, if they had the capacity, to shoot off an atom bomb with the gamma rays. What is it called? An electromagnetic pulse?
EMP.
EMP. And that would put us out of commission for some time.
Mm-hmm.
And all of this has to happen in order for these nations to come down upon Israel that's predicted in Ezekiel 38 and 39. And isn't it fascinating that the nation that leads them, and we know they're all Muslim except for Russia, which supports them, and Russia's supporting Persia, and the nation that leads them is Persia, which is Iran.
All right, but that's why if there's any strike on Iran, they're not going to be mortally wounded.
No,
maybe their nukes. Maybe their nukes will be partially taken out, but they are going to remain very alive and well. They'll be a part of the invasion of Gog and Magog, the various nations coming down to seize the spoil in Israel.
But I think that that Iran is really well. They are so determined that this take place. And I think that they are being protected by the evil spiritual world.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
I think this is if we could see into another dimension where God lives, we might see this conflict between God and Satan that's going on the earth right now. The Bible clearly teaches that we're not wrestling against flesh and blood, but against principalities, power, thrones, and dominions. And this is a conflict between Satan and God.
Now, we're talking here a little bit about the Muslim Messiah, the Mahdi. He's an Islamic form of the Antichrist. I think you have a sense that the Antichrist of the Bible actually could be a Muslim. Is that right?
Yes, and I have come to more and more believe that. If you want to go into it, I'll just share my feelings.
Please do.
First of all, Muhammad, I think under the inspiration of Satan, prophesied that a seventh prophet would come. He would be in the line of Ishmael, coming through actually the lines of Muhammad himself. He would rule the world for 7 years. And where did he get that idea? And then he would also conquer the Romans or southern Europe, and he would rule part of the time from Rome, and he would come at a time of a great earthquake. And this seventh prophet actually kind of fits our ideas of Antichrist, who is to rule for 7 years. Now, they believe that this is the Messiah of Islam, and here you have the Antichrist, or the in place of Christ, Christ meaning Messiah in the Greek. So you've got the Islamic Messiah, and you've got the Judeo-Christian Messiah, who is Jehovah. And you've got Allah on the one hand, which simply means the God, and his origins were the moon god Nanasin. And you have Jehovah, who is what is the name, or Yahweh, or the I Am that I Am. He revealed himself in the third chapter of Exodus. And these two are entirely different. Allah, we do not worship the same God, and I'm sure you've covered that already. Mm-hmm. But the Bible teaches that the little horn comes out of these three kingdoms that come together. And many have thought that, well, the ten toes were the nations of Europe.
Mm-hmm.
However, the iron legs and toes represent the Roman Empire, and the Roman Empire was both west and east.
Mm-hmm.
And when the Muslims conquered Constantinople in 1453, they moved the headquarters of Rome to Moscow and called Moscow the Third Rome, and the leader the Caesar or the Tsar. And that became the new headquarters of the Eastern Roman Empire. So you've got the two legs, each, just like the arms represented the Medes and the Persians, the two legs represented the Eastern and Western Roman Empire. So you've got five toes in the west and five toes in the east. Now, I didn't know what to do with that till I came upon the passage in Daniel where it says, the beast that comes out of the sea with the iron teeth, which is Rome, tramples down the whole earth. And you know, Russia trampled everything to the east, and the Western powers took everything else. And the entire world was under the heel of the descendants of the Roman Empire. Now, on the desk of Stalin was a plan to divide the world, if communism had taken over, into 10 major economic divisions, like we have NAFTA today, or mm-hmm. the European Community. And this is also on the desk, or the blueprint of the United Nations for the future. Now, this kind of combining of nation states into 10 major divisions throughout the world might find that there are three of them across the 1040 window from Morocco to the Philippines, and that out of these three that come together in a caliphate or in a representation, the Ummah, the Muslim community, which is what they have wanted all along, and out of this comes the seventh prophet, who is the Antichrist, who combines them all. And this really makes sense to me.
Well, do you have any compatriots who agree with you on that?
I'm not sure. I really haven't read anybody else on this. All I've done is gone into the scripture myself over the years, and because of my studies in Islam and realizing that Islam is the great antichrist system.
Yes, it's the antichrist system, but the reason it's hard to believe, though I know others, including Waleed Shawbat and others, believe in a similar fashion.
Chuck Missler, I think.
And Missler leans that way, and that is that the antichrist of our Bible could possibly be Islamic. The catch is Israel bowing down and worshiping a Muslim.
Well,
or maybe not even bowing down and worshiping a Muslim, but taking him seriously, allowing him to rebuild their temple, etc.
Well, I think after the fiasco of Ezekiel 38 and 39, things are going to be very different in the world. The Jews are going to have a little more respect. And I think that what the Antichrist does is establish a truce. It's not a real peace. It's just a truce. You see, Muhammad was great for truces. Osama is following Muhammad when he wants to give America a truce or Europe a truce. And all that is biding time saving time so that they can rearm and regroup. And this also happens with the Antichrist. He makes a truce.
Mm-hmm.
He allows the Jews to build the temple. But then after 3.5 years, he breaks the truce, just like Muhammad broke the truce of Hudaybiyah. And just like Arafat said after he signed the Oslo agreements, remember the truce of Hudaybiyah. He had no intention to keep those words. And So this is a technique or a real practice of Islam to make a truce and then break it.
You and I have talked and emailed a little bit about the pursuing of democracy in the midst of Sharia law. They're not about, this culture of Islam is not about to shed their burqas and Sharia law any more than Americans are going to make a drastic change in our lifestyle. So we're participating in an exercise in futility by trying to democratize various places, starting with Iraq, Afghanistan, possibly moving on to other countries over there.
Well, probably the modernist or the real moderates who would like to adapt to the West, such as the Shah of Iran and even maybe Abdullah of Jordan, could go along with this. But basically, Orthodox Islam is an enemy of democracy and freedom. Mm-hmm. They have said, and I'm quoting, all over the world, the twin evils of freedom and democracy have reaped havoc with people's lives. And Sheikh Omar Bakri, who is in London, a very outspoken imam of one of their mosques, has said, democracy is a concept the West has conjured to destroy the Islamic State. The idea of a democratic society is deceptive, dangerous, and unworkable. The party the Islamic Party, considers it is haram or forbidden to establish or participate in parties which call for capitalism, socialism, secularism, nationalism, or any other religion other than Islam. We are surrounded by a sea of unbelief, thoughts, practices, and what they call kafir or infidel systems of life. Homosexuals, adulterers, fornicators will be killed, and Jews too.
Well, I don't read anywhere in the Bible where the nations of the Middle East are going to lay down their arms much before the millennium. We have most all nations of the Middle East talked about in the Bible. There may be a different name, but that's an ancient name for today's Saudi Arabia, whatever. Nowhere do what we read instead is this war after this war and one invasion wanted, Psalm 83, with all the Arab nations coming against Israel.
I think that's Ezekiel 38 and 39.
Yeah, well, I think you and I feel that Ezekiel 38 and 39 could take place any time in the next few months to years.
I'd say 4 or 5 years,
yeah,
yes.
Next few years. But we're pursuing a more sane form of government among, all right, let's just take the Palestinians. We touched on that a minute ago. And so we pursue, the Bush administration pursues democracy amongst the Palestinians, and what happens? It's sort of a democracy run amok. They get in Hamas.
Yeah. They have a saying, their attitude toward democracy is one man, one vote, one time.
Mm-hmm.
and then we take over with Sharia law.
Yes. All right, so how do we get the Bush administration and the European Union and the United Nations, it's not just one entity, it's all sorts of entities, how do we get them to see that we may be spending far more billions of dollars than necessary trying to, again, use the word democratize, just for lack of a better word, democratize some of these rather radical nations, and most of them in the Middle East?
I don't know. It seems to me that the leaders of the world are blind
or deluded
to the enemy that we face.
Deluded.
And maybe that's satanic. Mm-hmm. I don't know. But it really is something else. This is the worst danger that the world has ever faced.
Exactly.
Far worse than communism or Hitler. Although communism and Hitler are really allied in a sense with what Islam is doing. Hitler, you know, was regarded as a hero among the Middle Easterners. And Mein Kampf, which means my struggle or my jihad, has been a bestseller in the Middle East. Now, if we think that Hitler was evil, what about those that support Hitler and say we're going to continue the work that Hitler began?
All right. Well, you, I think in one of our email exchanges, you said, and I'm quoting you here, talking about your opinion on the Iraq war, and quoting Dr. Jim Merck here, my guest this morning, why God may have allowed President Bush to pursue this Iraq policy.
Oh, my.
What's behind that statement?
Well, can I just give my whole opinion on this Iraq war?
Yes.
Okay, first of all, I believe that when Ariel Sharon came to this country, he was very much against the Palestinian state and giving anything up to the Palestinians. And he was right. But I think he was more afraid of Saddam. Saddam had Scud missiles. Saddam considered himself Nebuchadnezzar, a reincarnation. He was going to come down with his Jerusalem army. He had made a pact, according to the British Intelligence Digest in 1998, with the Iranians or the Persians and Syria, that they were going to combine their forces and attack Israel. Well, I think Mossad knew that. And so they were dead. In fact, everybody believed that Saddam had weapons of mass destruction and was on the verge of getting nuclear weapons. In fact, the Germans were convinced of it. And it's a strange thing to me that people are blaming Bush when they didn't find the weapons of mass destruction, which probably, according to one of Saddam's associates in a recent book, said were taken to Syria. But anyway, I think Bush said, we'll get rid of Saddam if you go along with the roadmap for peace, which was the peace of the quartet, you know, the Europe and so on. So when we got rid of Saddam, then Ariel Sharon was compelled to take the settlements out of Gaza, which was a terrible mistake.
Terrible. Mm-hmm.
And now Olmert is also doing the same thing in the West Bank. And Israel is just moving in the wrong direction. And we've really been pulling back some of our support on the part of evangelicals who say this is just not the way to go. God is going to judge all those who divide the land. And God will protect Israel if they hold their ground. And maybe someday there'll be a difference. I don't know. But these people don't just want a Palestinian state. They want the entire land of Palestine.
Israel.
They won't even recognize that Israel exists.
Mm-hmm.
And so then what happened was that when we took out Saddam, we took out Saddam's main force, or let's say the main buffer against Iran. You know, Saddam and Iran had a 10-year war, and they were at a stalemate. The Shiites are hated, really, by the Sunnis.
Mm-hmm.
Saddam was a Sunni. The Saudis are Sunnis. They're very much afraid of these Shiites. However, they have kind of gotten together to some extent in this common hatred of the Jews and the hatred of the United States. But when we took out Saddam, Persia began to come up. And Persia is a much stronger nation, really. There are 70 million people in Persia, whereas Saddam had only 25 million.
Persia is Iran.
Is Iran, yes. Yeah. And so I think that God allowed Bush to go in there to take out Saddam so that Persia, which is going to be the leader in Ezekiel 38 and 39, would come to the fore and become the leading aggressive nation in the Middle East.
Okay, I mean, I still think that Russia is going to be the primary player there.
That's true.
At least some of her Islamic republics, Kazakhstan, Uzbekistan, Tajikistan, some of those Islamic...
That's very possible.
Right.
But it's interesting that Putin was KGB mm-hmm. in the Middle East, and he supported Iraq, as we know, and he's supporting Iran. And, of course, in Ezekiel 38 and 39, the land of Magog and Gog really are the supporters of these Islamic nations. I don't think they would do it without the support of some other major nation, some other major country.
Yeah. This immigration issue, because it's on everyone's mind, and Muslims are immigrating to the West in record number. Europe is becoming Eurabia. Their birth rate is three times the rate of the Western world. We have no idea how many are sneaking over the borders in America, because all officials say there are OTMs other than Mexicans. And I just happened to pick out an article on David Horowitz's website. We're going to talk about David in just a minute, but he reviewed the book While Europe Slept, and he says, While Europe Slept argues that while Europe is currently only about 10% Islamic versus 2% for America, if present trends continue, it will only take a generation or two for Muslims to become the majority. The once noble continent of Europe will become Eurabia. And before 2050, most Europe is likely to become an outpost of Islamicism governed by Sharia law. We've got some equally troubled things going on in Canada. And based on the number of guests I've had on this radio program, from Paul Sperry to Ken Timmerman and others, they fear certainly not that kind of a massive invasion, but we do have an invasion. Your thoughts?
Yes. I don't know that it is intentional completely, because the Europeans actually invited these Muslims into their country to become, as it were, guest workers. They needed the labor because their population was not growing. They only had about a 1.4 per family child production, whereas you need 2.2 just to keep alive or stay even. The Muslims are between 4 and 8. And so they brought these people in to be workers so that they could support their socialistic system with early retirement and long vacations and so on. Helmut Kohl began in 1960 bringing the Turks in, because the Turks were, of course, a part of NATO. Today they number almost 2 million people just in Germany alone. And they refused to assimilate because Muhammad forbade it. And right now they're forming little enclaves of 50% of Malmo, Sweden, 40% of Rotterdam. They expect that maybe the first nation that will fall to them will be Holland. And ultimately their goal is to take over Europe, and they've always wanted to do that. They tried to do it in the 8th century and were turned back at the Battle of Tours, but then they tried twice more, were turned back at the gates of Vienna in the 16th and 17th centuries. That was only 300 years ago. Islam looked at Europe as one of the great barbarian areas and at Africa as the other, and they've wanted to conquer both, and they're moving in that direction right today.
All right. I didn't mean to interrupt you, but I just got to throw in, what's their agenda for America?
Well, their agenda for America, according to like CAIR, the Council for American Islamic Relations, Ibrahim Hooper, their communications director, said on an aside, well, he wouldn't mind. In fact, he'd like to see our constitution replaced by Sharia law. Mm-hmm. And the goal for us is for them to take over, and they're doing it very calmly and moderately, working for civil rights for Muslims until they get big enough and numerous enough to agitate for political power. In fact, in Michigan today, Muslims have taken over the city council in Lansing and reversed some of their ordinances, especially the noise ordinance that said they couldn't have these muezzins calling people to prayer five times a day and disturbing the atmosphere.
Yeah, well, Paul Sperry and Ken Timmerman, who've been on this program, have said that they are obtaining some significantly high offices in America, including Homeland Security. Their goal, of course, is to have a presidential candidate. Now, that may be many years away, but that is their goal.
That would be unbelievable. Because, see, Islam is not only a religion.
Yes.
We have allowed this, we allow freedom of religion in this country. The problem is that Islam is really a political system, mm-hmm. a social and economic system, all wrapped into one and wrapped in this religion. Well, you give them the freedom of religion, and then they want to exercise their politics and their economic ideas, which are anti-capitalist, and they want to take over and rule themselves by Sharia law. In fact, in Canada today, enclaves of Muslims are petitioning the Canadian Parliament to rule themselves with their own law. Well, that would make them a little sovereign nation within Canada. And that's what they're becoming in many parts of Europe, because Muhammad taught that once they have taken over, say they take over a district or a city or a community or a neighborhood, that is no longer France or Britain or Sweden, as far as they're concerned. This has become a part of Islam, or a part of Islam and a part of a Muslim world. And once they have it, the idea is that all lands once occupied and ruled by Muslims forever belong to Islam. They say that Spain belongs to them because they ruled it for 800 years, and the land of Palestine because it was a part of Islam, conquered in 638 and then dominated by the Ottoman Empire for centuries.
I've had David Horowitz on this program, talking to him about how the American left seems to always side with radical Islam. First of all, Why do you suppose this is? Islamofascism intends to destroy America, and yet American leftists, including many in political leadership, seem to always favor them, seem to always cater to them, seem to always cave into them. Political correctness, what's going on here?
Can I give a biblical answer?
Please,
from my biblical worldview?
This is the point of my program.
In Ephesians, the second chapter, speaking to the Ephesians who had been converted, born again into God's family, Paul said, "As for you, you were dead in your transgressions and sins, in which you used to live, when you followed the ways or the rules of this world and of the ruler of the kingdom of the air." And we know that is Satan. And then he says, "This is the spirit who is now at work in those who are disobedient." And Jesus called those that were in opposition to him children of the devil. That is, those in whom the devil dwelt. John said the same thing. There's an emphasis on the spiritual world out there that the secular world doesn't want to recognize. Mm-hmm. And I believe that if Satan is working in Islam, and he was working in communism, he was working in Hitler, he's also working in the American left. So they all tend to stick together. It's amazing. Even though they differ on many ideas, you can't imagine. Communism was atheistic, and yet they supported the Allah-worshipping Arabs. Hitler was a cult, and he wanted himself maybe to be a god. But he was really in alliance with all of these Middle Eastern countries and supported them with arms through Saudi Arabia. And all of Hitler's henchmen, the SS troops, when the war was over, they either fled to Egypt or Syria. From Syria, they went to South America. But many of them became administrators in the government of Gamal Abdel Nasser in Egypt.
So you're saying then that basically the answer to my question, which is why does, let's just stick with the American left right now, that the reason that the American left is so taken with Islam, defends it, calls them freedom fighters or insurgents and not terrorists, is some sort of a spiritual deception.
I think it's a spiritual thing, and I think that Satan indwells all of these who are in opposition to God.
Mm-hmm.
And they use two techniques, and it's universal among all of them, beginning with Hitler and Lenin. Lenin had two ideas. One was that the greatest motivator next to fear was hatred.
Mm-hmm.
So he taught his Bolsheviks to hate. Then secondly, he knew that the only way he could get his points across was to lie. He called it propaganda. And Hitler picked up on that. They called it the big lie. The hatred that is endemic among the Islamists today and the lying that goes on is just unbelievable. In fact, the hatred can't even be understood completely. It says here, in fact, I have a quotation from this particular work. It says, "The bin Ladens of this world are driven by their loathing of Christian crusaders, heretics, dissenters, Jews, women, and their rejection of American and Western modernity. They hate civilization in a radically nihilistic way. They want to destroy it." And the hatred of the Jews is just, it's proverbial. It's mm-hmm. unreal. Let me read just one thing that one of the leaders said not too many years ago, a mufti of Jerusalem. He said, "The entire Jewish population in Palestine must be destroyed, driven into the sea. Allah has bestowed upon us the rare privilege of finishing what Hitler only began. Let the jihad begin. Murder the Jews. Murder them all." And I could multiply that maybe 50 times.
Mm-hmm.
So when Ahmadinejad said, "We want to wipe out Israel," my goodness, they've been saying that for 75 years.
Right, but I think, of course, God's not going to allow that, but
no.
That doesn't mean that Ahmadinejad is not going to try. He could certainly launch some missiles on Israel.
Yes, he could, and I think that part of the invasion, the Great War, the Ezekiel 38 and 39 conflagration, is going to include nuclear weapons, and here's an idea. And this is a crazy idea, but it has some merit. When they drop those nuclear bombs, the nations, many of them armies, are going to come down the Jordan Valley because that's the path, way to Jerusalem. And that Jordan Valley goes 3,500 feet down below sea level. It is a rift in the earth's crust all the way from Galilee all the way into Kenya. What if they drop some atom bombs in that? What if that is the thing? Because atom bombs create a seismic, just like an earthquake. But that would trigger that great earthquake, which destroys these nations, this great earthquake in the land of Israel. And I'm not so sure, but what it won't go beyond that in what they call an earthquake storm and be a great global earthquake like the one we see in Revelation 6, where every mountain and island is moved out of its place.
Right, but your feeling is that the Gog-Magog War that you're talking about there actually may not even be in the tribulation. It could be in our...
It comes before the tribulation, and I'll tell you why.
Coming very recent years.
I'll tell you why, because in Joel, I think it's the second chapter at the end, it says that the great outpouring of the wrath of God comes after the sun, moon, and stars event, when the sun, moon, and stars are obscured. Well, where that happens in Revelation is Revelation 6, at the opening of the sixth seal. You have the sun, moon, and stars obscured. Mm-hmm. And I think that that is when the great, what we call the great tribulation starts, that this is the first event, and that the church is taken out and rescued at that time.
You have as your subtitle to the book, Dr. Merk, The Never-Ending Jihad Against Christianity. Now, I am aware of that because of the various guests I've had on and conference speakers, my own research. But can you give us a real thumbnail sketch of what you mean by the never-ending war against Christianity? And my main concern is how this war is being played out in the 20th and 21st century.
Well, I believe, first of all, that Satan invented Islam through Muhammad. And that the angel that appeared to Muhammad was, as Paul says, Satan masquerading as an angel of light. I was talking to a Coptic Christian, a medical doctor, and I told him I was writing this book, and I was writing a chapter on the Quran at the time, and immediately he straightened up, and he'd been in this all of his life. He said, Islam is a satanic religion, and the Quran is a satanic book. So you can't understand this except for the spiritual conflict. And Satan hates Christ because Christ destroyed his works at the cross, and he has tried to deceive the world into thinking, and even with the Da Vinci Code today and the Jesus Seminar, that Jesus is not incarnate God, that he was not crucified, was not raised from the dead. He is not the Savior. He's just a prophet. And in fact, in Islam, they embrace Jesus. But if you believe that Jesus died on the cross and rose again for our salvation and that he's the Son of God, you're going to hell. That's why I say it's the great Antichrist system of our time. And Paul and John says that we know that this is the last hour, as it were, of the last day, because many Antichrists have come. Well, Islam is persecuting Christians over the world today. 8 out of the 10 most persecuting nations are Islamic. And if you take a Bible, for example, into Saudi Arabia, they could cut off your head. If you have a Bible study, even in your own home, they could arrest you and eventually behead you. This kind of thing goes on in the Sudan. It's going on in Nigeria. It's going on in Indonesia. It's going on in Pakistan, wherever these people. And they just hate Christianity. Well, where does this hatred come from? I think it's because Satan hates Christ and hates Christianity and hates what is ultimately going to happen to him.
We have about a minute left. Do you want to wrap up with any final thoughts?
Well, this is such an incredibly vast subject. It takes me more than 6 hours to get through a seminar,
yeah.
And we've only had a few minutes here.
Well, here, let me. Well, we've had 60 minutes, so say this in your book, and this perhaps we can sort of wrap up with, but you say, Islam is a political, economic, and social system wrapped in a religion. When we give them freedom of religion, they want to be a free entity within any nation where they dwell, politically and culturally. Muslim enclaves in Canada are right now petitioning the Canadian Parliament to allow them to rule themselves with Sharia law. What does this mean but that they want to be a little sovereign nation within the larger nations? And thanks to organizations like CARE, the Council on American Islamic Relations, they're making extremely large gains here in America.
We've got to say this, though. There are many Muslims who are moderate.
Yes.
And they don't like this. They feel that we're abusing them with this statement, these statements, and we've got to recognize that they are not on the side of these radicals.
All right. We just wish they'd speak out a whole lot more.
Oh, yes, they don't, because they know that this is what Islam teaches.
Yeah, well, so they don't speak out because they're afraid.
And they're afraid that they'll get it in the neck themselves.